afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, and happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, hello to you, too. And man, it's almost the end of October. Just unbelievable. The 23rd, it's Wednesday, and it's great to be here. Gold today, we had a nice day in gold today. It was up 410 in the New York spot price currently open. That's the aftermarket. We're looking on the ask price, 1492.50. Silver's up 2 pennies today at $17.61. Now, platinum had a day. Finally. Platinum gets the gold sticker today. It was up $25, almost 3% at $919. Palladium was down $9 at $1,750. Eventually, there's going to be a reversal there, ladies and gentlemen, between palladium and platinum, because palladium is just getting too expensive. Of course, they do each have their own little fundamentals when it comes to the catalytic converters and jewelry and everything. But, you know, that price of palladium, and they're going to switch to platinum where they can, because it's a much, actually, it's a much, you know, it's going to be a lot lower price. So eventually it's coming. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to, trust me. And you have the USDX today was down 0.07 at 97.46. Crude oil was higher by 1.34 at 55.82. And let me go ahead and get to the paper markets today. There is pressure on it most of the day. And, of course, bring out the working group, the plunge protection team. Dow was up 46 points, 26,834. The NASDAQ was up 15 at 8,119. The S&P was up 8 at 3,004. So, you know, whatever it is, well, let's go to 10-year yield. Let's do that first. 1.76%. That was down 0.01. And we're going to talk a little bit about Bitcoin. That took a hammering today. That was down almost 8% at 74.70. And, I mean, it's really no surprise. You know, I mean, that's what they're going to do. They run the price up, and then, you know, those are that are smart enough will take their profits and drop the price. And then all those newbies and those who still have faith in nothing will go or hold on and write it, come into the market. They'll buy more because they think they're buying on the dip, and they'll run it back up, and then the smart ones will sell. That's the way it works. And but anyway, we'll talk about that here and then right here in the near future. We do have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. We always enjoy having Wendy here join us on Wednesday. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi there.
So sorry to miss you guys last week. As you know, my car blew up. But
sorry to hear.
I know. But it just, you know, messed up my whole day. Anyway, so
sorry. All the king's horses and all the king's men put it back together again?
It's halfway put back. Anyway, it just really miscombobulated my whole day, and I do apologize.
No worries.
Well, I thought we'd talk about cataracts. Are they preventable? Are they reversible?
You know? Reversible?
I know. Isn't that amazing? We're going to get to that. Cataracts are kind of a significant problem in vision loss for most people globally, not just in the U.S., and we're told that we should expect 95% of adults to get cataracts after age 60. So cataracts, you know, cause that cloudy, distorted vision thing so common that we really don't tend to think of it as a disease. So if 95% of the population is ill with a disease, that would be considered a pandemic. But yet cataracts, they're not really, you know, considered a disease, and but they do deliver a real blow to the quality of life for people that have them. So we're going to take a look at how we can avoid them and reverse them. Let's just talk about that. So let's talk about the United States just for a minute. 24 million have cataracts between the ages of 40 and over. And one of the reasons we look at cataract disease as no big deal is because it develops very slowly after, you know, we age. So the scientific medicine is you know, says, hey, no worries, we got artificial lenses we can put in to replace your natural ones, and the cataract surgery is offered. So they're saying if you should get the cataract surgery if you have a lot of inflammation in the eye, bleeding, infections, retinal detachment, macular edema, swelling of the retina, swelling of the cornea, droopy eyelids, ocular hypertension, which is an elevated eye pressure. So they're saying, you know, cataract surgery may help you there. But it's considered low risk as for a surgery, and it costs about $10,000 to get both eyes done, but they usually do one eye at a time. And patients are told, you know, they should really seriously consider if, you know, they can't see safely to work or drive, if reading and watching the TV is a real problem, if they can't see well enough to cook or shop, as well as they can't see well enough to identify changes in surfaces where they may trip over things and fall, if they can't see well enough to even read the medication bottle, make sure they're taking the right stuff. And also bright lights make it hard for them to see, so that's why driving such a problem at night with all the glare. And it really affects, you know, their independence and quality of life. So that's when the doctors start recommending the surgery. But I wanted to talk real quickly about new research that the American Academy of Ophthalmology talked about regarding cataract surgery. Especially for the people of Australia where they did this testing, they said it does help them keep some independence. They can drive again because the surgery, according to their research, improved their vision by 48%. So cataract surgery is said to produce better visual acuity, but a lot of times, you know, sometimes people aren't told the whole deal about what to expect from cataract surgery. Did you know that in some instances, like 10% or more of the cases, they have to redo the surgery? Did you know that?
No, I did not. I haven't heard anyone who had that issue, though.
Well, the thing they pointed out in Australia is they have the socialized one-payer government healthcare over there. And according to Dr. Jonathan Nigg, University of Western Australia, he says it's a real problem because people have to wait for months to be approved. And a lot of times it's real important to get this surgery done in a timely manner. So we're going to talk about some of that in a minute. So what happens after you get the surgery? Well, patients are sometimes not told what would happen post-surgery. There can be some complications to the lens capsule that holds this is the capsule that would have held your natural lens, but now is going to hold the artificial lens in your eye. So the capsule can become opaque, making it hard to see again. So this occurs in about 10% of the cases, and they have to have the surgery redone. It's called posterior capsule opification. And the reason it clouds up the artificial lens, like you had a cataract again, is that there's still cataract cells in the capsule that holds the artificial lens, and those cells can translate onto the artificial one and cloud it up. You get blurry vision and trouble seeing all over again. So scientific medicine is, you know, not too concerned about that problem because they can recommend laser surgery to try to remove that cloudiness on the cataract lens itself. And they hope that corrects the problem. But, you know, having a laser increases the risk. They can scar that lens, and then they have to do the surgery all over again. A lot of concerns there. It can misshape or squeeze the lens. The laser can heat up the lens, and it can misshape in it. So there's a lot of issues they have to worry about. And once cataract surgery is done, it can't be reversed. In other words, the doctors can't put your old natural eye lens back in. That's it. Done. You have to have the artificials after that. So people who are nearsighted, it's also known as presbyopia, they're going to have difficulty with close-up vision, and even with the artificial lenses. So they're going to see halos and other visual disturbances. So don't think that getting cataract surgery is going to make everything pie in the sky. It's not. So if the lens shifts after surgery, it's called dislocated intraocular lens. That could happen. And the patient actually can see the edge of the lens, and they have double vision at that point, and they have to have the surgery redone. Nobody hears about this, yeah. Right?
No, I've never heard that.
Okay. So a second surgery would be required to fix that. A lot of complications, but of course, medicine downplays that. Another occurrence patients may not be aware of is that after surgery, the lens implants can scar into place 3 months after surgery, and this could make it difficult to remove a lens if it needs to be redone. So lens dislocation is, you know, if it happens, they have to do it right away because they don't want scarring to make it difficult to remove. Also, let's see, this is cataract prevention, kind of a heard of, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think anybody teaches this.
Really? Prevention?
I don't think so. Well, because surgery is promoted as the only treatment for cataract problems, and patients the patients are pretty much told, hey, you're just going to have to put up with the visual distortions, cloudiness, blurriness, until it becomes so critical surgery is required. But doctors report, you know, hey, cataract surgery is 95% successful, so, you know, why complain? You know, just go with that. But some of the causes for the cataract to form in the first place is the lens of your eye consists of water and protein, and there's a specific balance there. So a lot of times what we eat, breathe in, expose our eyes to can disrupt that balance, and the proteins get altered, and this leads to a clouding of the lens, so there's an oxidization that occurs. And so trauma or inflammation to the eye can upset that balance and cause the cataract. Unsafe exposure to ultraviolet light can cause it. Diseases like diabetes can encourage it, as well as smoking and prescription meds. If you're taking prescription meds, they can create cataracts. So if you're on things like steroids, statin drugs for cardiovascular reasons, headache medications like phenothiazine, these all can actually encourage the development of cataracts. Excessive alcohol can also encourage and cataracts. You ever hear that old expression, Melanie, that you can drink yourself blind?
I have.
Yeah, that's where that comes from.
I heard silly too.
Yeah, and some occupations can also put you at a higher risk of cataracts, like let's say if you're a welder. So this is all important to remember. So let's look at some of the foods we can eat, really basic stuff, pump up our diet to help, reduce the risk of cataracts. So if you're wanting to prevent cataracts, fruits, vegetables, orange, watermelon, avocados, spinach, asparagus, these all have nutrition to feed the eye and keep that balance on the lens healthy and well. Foods like also green tea with the antioxidant carotenoids, also very beneficial. So if you're eating 3 or more servings of fruits and vegetables per day, you have you're obtaining that glutathione antioxidant known to prevent the progression of cataracts. So if you're doing that, you're good to go. But how do you reverse them? If you've got, like, how many people out there go to the eye doctor, get an exam, and they don't even know they have cataracts, but the ophthalmologist may say, hey, you got the beginning of a cataract. They call them baby cataracts. Mm-hmm. And then we go, well, doc, what do I need to do about that? And they say nothing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know?
So one ophthalmologist, though, Melanie and Dave, in Florida, was really not happy with how the medical establishment deals with cataracts, so he went looking for solutions. And he found a product called Ocumed eye drops made by a company in Arizona, and it helps remove the oxidized protein off the lens of the eye, so it reverses the cataract.
Wow.
Right? And so another physician in Germany called Dr. Willer Schwab, he developed an eye drop made from the Sinemure monomia plant, and it's all natural, and it feeds nutrients to the eye to strengthen it against all kinds of eye diseases, including dry eye, inflammation, detached retina, floaters, all that stuff, eye strain from blue screens. It's an amazing thing to have that in your eye. I've tested both of them. I like them a whole lot.
Are they over the counter, Wendy?
Well, no, they're that's the thing. You know, when I was talking to this eye doctor, you know, I called the companies up, and they only sell to practitioners. So I know. And so get this, the Ocumed eye drop, if your ophthalmologist were to sell it to you, they charge you $100 for a 50-day supply of drops.
Jeez.
Now, the Cinemina or Montemita is a little less expensive, and it's only 30 days of drops. I wasn't willing to hear, we can't sell to you. So I filled out a bunch of paperwork, and we got both those drops. And we're not selling them for that price. So you can get the Ocumed for $56. And you can get the Cinemia or Montemia drops for $22.
That's awesome. And the first is a 3-month supply?
Yeah, the first one's 50 days, and the Ocumet is the one that gets rid of the cataract. But you can use both these eye drops together. And here's the thing. The Ocumet for cataracts, I talked to the owner of the company. They did clinical trials, and they had doctors, ophthalmologists, weigh in using these drops for 2 years with patients with cataracts. And let me read some of the responses, just a few. This is from a Dr. Larry Wallace of Ithaca, New York. He says, I've been prescribing Ocumet eye drops for cataracts for several years now and have found that about 90% of my patients have demonstrated a reduction of their cataracts along with improved vision. And this is from a Dr. Cantrell, St. Louis, Missouri. He said, there's no doubt in my mind that Ocumet eye drops is an effective alternative to cataract surgery. Check that out. Wow. And lastly, this is Dr. Daniel Temper. Now, he's a medical surgical ophthalmologist in Chicago, Illinois. He says, my patients report definite improvement in their vision using Ocumet eye drops. My observation is the anterior laminar cataracts are melting away.
Jeez. Wow.
And that's what happens is, your cataracts come on slowly, gradually. So when you use these drops, the same thing is in reverse. So it's not going to go away within 2 months, depending on the severity of the oxidized layer. It may take 6 months, it may take 12 months using the drops. But most people hang in there for at least 12 months using it. Now, I've used both drops. You can use them as preventions, too. And the research from the Ocumet folks is they've also tested it post-cataract surgery. So even if you've had cataract surgery and you don't want those lenses to cloud up, you can use the drops. They're safe for artificial lenses, and you can use them for your pets so they don't get cataracts.
Hot dog.
It wouldn't have anything to do with laser surgery, would it? I mean, would it affect that in any way?
No. Mm-mm. All natural stuff, but it's the right balance, the right chemistry. It seems to work. Very soothing. If you got dry eye, amazing. You don't need wedding drops if you use that stuff. It's awesome sauce. And we have
them. Well, you know where to send it, don't you, Wendy?
Yeah. And you can, they're up on the website. You can call us at 866-229-3663. You can ask us about it. And I tell you, I just get them in here and I sell out of them. So I'm constantly ordering these things.
Well, hold one for me, because you know what? That's exactly what my doctor says. You have the beginnings, and it'll be a while before you have to address
them.
Oh,
don't wait. Don't wait.
Yeah, because it'll be a while before you have to, so we're not going to worry about them now. Yeah. That's exactly what they say.
That's that. I know. We've heard it all too often, but there's a solution for everyday problems, and here it is. So I can't take the credit. We're not manufacturing the drops, but we found companies that are doing it right, so we're offering it.
All righty. Well, I appreciate it. Give your phone number real quick.
866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate it. Great information there, ladies and gentlemen, particularly at our ages. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave, Dave Allen. Oh, it's just one of those days, I guess. But anyway, we're here for you, and all focus is what's happening, in D.C. and everything. And, the markets did turn around. I saw an interesting interview by Becky Quick on CNBC by the Senator Rick Scott down there in Florida. And it was about the trade agreement. And he says he really
Quote, unquote.
He pretty much says he really doesn't believe that there's going to be a completion or a trade deal done. But he started blaming, China being the communist nation that they are, how every time they come up or make a statement, and it's the same thing that we talked about and then I mentioned just a couple of weeks ago about, first they agreed to buy, $1 trillion of ag. Well, where did that go? They backed out of that. Then they were supposed to do another, $60 billion or something. Then they backed out of that. So all these little along the way, there's supposedly all these little snippets of things they were going to do to help this trade war get completed, and nothing ever comes of it. And this is what he was talking about. And he says he wants China to open their markets, and he brought in Hong Kong. He says, but he really doesn't believe that there will ever be, knowing China, knowing the president of China, that there will ever be a completion of a new trade agreement. And I thought that was pretty interesting because, he is a big supporter of President Trump. And she did ask specifically that question. Well, what about, the optimism coming from President Trump? And he says, things can always get done and so forth and whatnot. But it was still his view that he really didn't think it would get done. I found that interesting, Dave.
Yeah, I think Marco Rubio may have made similar comments today too, Melody.
Well, it's interesting then that all of these comments are coming out the same day, so I'm not quite sure what that's all about, but, just kind of interesting. And, we continue to see, it's a weird market when we're looking at the real estate and the mortgage apps. It's kind of like day one week they're up, one week they're down. They're kind of on this roller coaster. And last week's climb, course, caused a drop in a mortgage demand. Mortgage application volume fell almost 12% compared with the previous week. Volume was still higher than a year ago because interest rates were significantly higher last year, but we're having, that's a considerable drop, in a week. I don't know if heading into fall makes any difference, if we're coming out of that the spring summer climax of real estate and sales and so forth. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. But the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage has increased 10 basis points to 4.02 from 3.92%, which was 109 basis points higher the same week last year. So the rise in rates caused a 17% plunge in applications and refinance of a home loan. And that has always been a strong market, it seems, going through all this turmoil in rates.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, as we mentioned, almost weekly, borrowers with larger loans are the most sensitive to rate changes. That makes sense intuitively. And with rates climbing last week, you know, the average size of a refinance loan application fell to its lowest level this year. Mortgage apps to purchase a home, which are less sensitive to weekly rate moves, fell, 4% for the week, but were still 6% higher compared with a year ago. Now, given how much lower rates are today than they were last year, home sales ought to be seeing more of a boost. But buyers, you know, they're facing much higher home prices, you know, that are offsetting the savings from lower rates. And that's due primarily to the increasingly severe shortage of homes for sale, you know, amid all this higher demand. According to the National Association of Realtors, Melody, home prices in September saw the biggest annual jump in almost 2 years, with sales falling more than expected.
Hmm. Well, you know, this is kind of interesting. We have two-thirds, almost 2 in 3 finance officers in large cities are predicting a recession as soon as 2020. Now, this is a new report from the National League of Cities. And, of course, it comes as we've seen these weakening in major economic indicators and shrinking revenue sources putting pressure on these municipal budgets. One of the first signs of changing economic conditions can be seen in city revenue collections. And for the first time in 7 years, generally seen as the recovery phase since the Great Recession, cities expect revenues to decline as they close the books on the 2019 fiscal year. Now, the impact of changing economic conditions tend to be felt by cities sooner than at the national level. Some fiscal reporting happens on a yearly basis. There's often a lag of about 18 to 24 months for an economic change, particularly property taxes, to show up on the city ledgers, Dave.
Well, this is significant. You know, what you just mentioned means that the downward trend cities are now seeing likely reflect the broader economic slowdown that's already started. The National League of Cities annual city fiscal conditions report, which will be released first thing next week. That report analyzed the responses from finance officers in over 550 cities of varying sizes, but all with populations greater than 10,000. It showed that cities' revenue growth stalled in 2018, but this year's continued drop indicates these mounting pressures on city budgets. At the same time of, you know, these revenue declines, expenditures grew by 1.8% last year. And city officials are predicting they'll grow again by 2.3% this year, thanks to climbing costs associated with infrastructure, public safety / law enforcement, and pension costs, which, as listeners know, we also talk a lot about on this program, given the incredibly large and alarming unfunded liabilities in state and local government pension plans. So turns out that a finance officer from large cities and larger mid-sized cities are more likely than those from smaller and smaller mid-sized cities to expect a recession in the next 2 years.
Well, there are a couple of factors, Dave, that drive this. And, you know, we see a wider gap between revenue growth and spending growth in the large cities than smaller cities. You have business investments in 2019. That's also declining, you know, so that tends to affect bigger cities first, especially in the way of income tax revenues. And then the housing market growth, well, you know, as we mentioned, it looks like it's beginning to level off in most places and maybe even starting to slump in some previously hot markets, you know, in some of these larger cities. So while larger cities might be nearing the end of this cycle of expansion, smaller cities may still have a little bit more room to grow, but of course, as usual, the Midwest is bearing the brunt of declining conditions.
Yeah, just sort of as a postscript to that news, you know, you got property sales and income tax revenues. They tend to be the largest sources of revenue for cities. The fact that all three of those sources are trending downward at the same time, and of course, combined with the growing gap between city revenues and expenses, certainly suggests that an economic downturn is here or just around the corner.
I guess this is good news. See, we bring you good news, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not sure the overall program is good news, but I guess any time that your health premiums drop 4%, I guess that's a good thing. I'd have to wait and see what it is for, you know, I would need more stats to see if this is good news or what, but the average premium for a 27-year-old for a middle-of-the-road plan is going to be about 4% lower in 2020 than it was this year. Of course, this was coming up by the Health and Human Services Department, and it was announced yesterday. There's going to be 20 more insurers selling plans through the healthcare.gov for a total of 175. You know, I don't know if that's increased competition, Dave, or just the wannabe to get on the government's paycheck, to get checks, to get subsidies from the government.
Curious to see how many of those 20 are companies that had been participants before, particularly in the early days of the ACA, and who left for various reasons, namely because of lower profits. So that'll be interesting. And you know, I did take note that, you know, the 4% lower premiums is for, you know, a young, presumably healthy person, as opposed to those of us, you know, approaching the Medicare age. So you're right, it will be interesting to see how you know, premiums for the different age brackets come out when this open season begins, a little over a week.
But isn't that the age that young adults fall off their parents' policy?
Oh, it is. It is.
So
through 26 years.
Yeah, so that probably has a lot to do with it, make it a little easier for, you know, to get into their first year paying for their own health insurance. So I'd like to know what that connection would be there. I mean, that's just an interesting year that it is 27. But congrats for them. They're going to save 4%. But but we do know, I think it was this administration that has opened up, you know, a little more access to inexpensive, sometimes bare-bone options, you know. And I don't know, it just kind of reminds me, Dave, you know, we talk about inflation. You know, it's like, oh, there's no inflation. Oh, there's no inflation. And, you know, you go to the store, but what they did is they changed the packaging. You know, it's all in the same box. The box didn't shrink. But if you look at the number of ounces of cereal that you get, they shrank it by maybe an ounce. So you're getting less for at least the same amount of money. And I wonder if it's the same thing. You're getting less for the same amount of money. I don't know.
That's an interesting question. I mean, the thing about the ACA is that, you know, to be one of these plans, you know, you have to agree to a minimum level of benefits. Now, you know, how these plans try to, you know, outsell their competitors is by offering, you know, very in some cases, tiny nuanced differences in certain benefits. You know, be it, you know, this is beyond a deductible and copay. You know, it just might be allowing more, say, you know, one plan offers 25 visits to a chiropractor a year, and so you offer 30, things like that. So, you know, the good news is for consumers anyway, that if you're fortunate, especially if you're fortunate, well, it's a double-edged sword again, too, if you qualify for a government subsidy, because it, you know, the higher your subsidy, the lower your income, vice versa, the lower, you know, your income, you know, the higher your subsidy, you know, as long as your joint income isn't over 400, more than 400% of, you know, the current year's poverty level. So it's this exchange system is certainly more complicated than what meets the eye. So again, I think it's going to be real interesting to see how it continues to evolve. I guess especially after next year's presidential elections, depending how, you know, who wins, how it turns out in Congress, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'm not a fan of subsidies for anything, and you know, and this was something what I personally believe should never have, you know. You don't read it after you pass something, and but that's another topic, and that's another anyway. Let's go on, and because there's nothing in this world, ladies and gentlemen, that's free. I learned that from a very tiny little girl. We were told nothing is free. So, and, you know, let's address the real issues of health care instead of subsidizing everybody. Let's address the real issues. But they can't do that. They don't want to do that because then everything would have to be exposed.
You don't want
corruption.
You don't want to offend the political contributors, Melody.
No. You don't want to look what these, you know.
And that's the crux, I think.
Well, I'm sure it is, but look at the physicians. Look at the pharmaceutical industry. Look what they've done.
Right.
Let's take a peek at. And you're right. It's the, you know, it's the money that talks. But and all that would be exposed. So let's not really address the issues. It's no different than the veterans, hospitals, and everything. Let's just not give them their ability to go out into into the private sector for health care. Because that's just going to put more pressure on the private sector healthcare. Let's truly fix the problem. So they don't have to do that. But we can't fix our problems anymore. Because there's so much intertwining corruption. And it's not, you know, and then we're back to the fiat dollar. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. I assure you, please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. During the break, we, you know, we're all fired up coming off talking about the Affordable Care Act. And I asked Dave if he had read about, because I just basically saw the headline about Facebook. Zuckerberg is pledging $1 billion to fight the housing situation. They committed $1 billion to tackle the affordable housing shortages in the Bay Area and California. Now, this is a surprise move that lands a social media company among the handful of corporate giants offering massive amounts of cash to ease the crisis that's racking the state. So I guess there's other corporate giants that are doing this too. But it's over the next 10 years. And it's going to be in both money and land that would help create up to 20,000 homes where teachers, nurses, and other essential workers can live closer to the communities that they serve. So Dave, is it really helping the homeless? I mean, it sounds like a really great idea, you know, that they're really doing something to fight, you know, to help with affordable housing. But are they cleaning up the area, helping with the homeless, or is this to bring in workers because these people service the millionaires?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I guess the proof will be in the pudding. I mean, how will the outcome of this billion-dollar investment sort of be manifested, for lack of a better word? I mean, the article you mentioned says, you know, in land and housing. Now, does housing mean single family homes? You know, the price of which in Silicon Valley is beyond the means of probably 90% of Americans. Or is it a combination of, you know, different types of housing, single family homes, twins, apartment buildings? And I mean, I know in the San Francisco, in the city of, I don't know anymore about the suburbs. I mean, that area of the country was known as sort of the avant-garde of this so-called smart growth movement that, you know, popped up around the country starting around 20 years ago. And a key component of that is, you know, affordable housing ordinances, legislation that, you know, requires, you know, in every development, especially in multifamily housing developments, a set aside. So if you build, say, a 100-unit apartment complex or condominium, you know, the legislation might require that 10% of the units be set aside for, quote, low-income people and families in particular. And how that's defined is probably tied to the poverty rate in most cases. So long story short, you know, this is certainly on the surface a magnanimous gesture by Zuckerberg. But again, I myself am skeptical until you know, I see the results. It sounds like this isn't an attempt to improve the homelessness situation, which is, you know, apparently still rampant in San Francisco. But to the extent it helps more middle-income people, you know, afford to live as Zuckerberg is saying, you know, in the communities that, you know, they work in. Well, hey, let's wait and see how it if it really works out that way.
Well, what it reminds me of is, remember during the .com, all these campuses were being built for their employees. This kind of reminds me of, you know, campuses for those that will service them.
Well, and you're right.
That's what it kind of reminds me of, because, you know, reading a little further in this article, it says the majority of the Facebook money is going to go towards building housing, and which we talked about, which, you know, but it could also fund homes outside of California. $250 million to develop housing on state-owned land throughout California.
That's interesting.
So, you know... You know, I don't know if anybody else would have it. You know, if you live in California, I think it'd be a little bit of an issue, because that state-owned land is the land of the citizens. And it should be up to the citizens to vote for it, Dave, shouldn't it?
Well, you know, I guess the counter-argument to that would be, well, we live in a representative democracy, and we elect representatives to our state legislatures to represent us on issues like this. However, as you well know, California is, you know, the quintessential put on the ballot, you know, any issue that affects the populace. And it seems to me that this certainly would be a good issue to let the voters decide. You know, shall, you know, however they're going to word it, you know, to authorize the state to provide land for this purpose.
Now, this also says, okay, so they get $250 million to develop housing on state-owned land. $150 million is supposed to produce affordable housing for the homeless in the Bay Area.
Oh, wow.
Well, through a fund that was launched in January. But this was a fund that was launched in January by Jan Zuckerberg Initiative, the San Francisco Foundation, Facebook, Gentech, and others. So that's going into a fund by all of these computer and AI companies. So $350 million to be deployed in the future as needed. So that's the 10 years deal. And $25 million to help build up 120 apartments, like you were talking about, for teachers. So teachers get apartments. They don't get homes. Mm. They get apartments. Mm. So.
Well, I guess we know our place, depending upon your profession, right?
Yes. Jeez. Anyway, you know, it sounds good, but the devil's in the details, ladies and gentlemen. I guess anything that can go to it, you could say might be good, but... You know, who really are the winners? Who really are the losers? Is this a win-win-win situation?
You know, if we can, Melody, that was a great topic. Before we move on to other planned discussions, I just want to mention briefly two sort of related breaking news items. One is the New York Fed announced this afternoon that it's increasing its temporary overnight repurchase agreement operations from the current $75 billion to $120 billion a day. Yeah. And in addition to the repo increase, the so-called term repo operations, which are, you know, typically up to, you know, from more than one night to 2 weeks, are increasing an additional $10 billion to $45 billion. So the Fed, you know, is finding ways to increase the amount of help it's providing to the banking system. There's another article I saw that just came out about negative interest rates, and there's a new Federal Reserve study, the San Francisco Fed, by one of its senior economists, that looked at the results of five European central banks that implemented negative rates. The Danish bank first went negative in 2012. And in each case, he says, the move immediately brought government rates down and helped loosen up those economies. And more so, he says, had the U.S. done the same during the financial crisis, our growth rate after the crisis would have been better. Now, this article doesn't quantify that, but just reminds us that the Fed took the Fed funds rate down to its range of 0 to 0.25%, but never actually crossed the threshold into negative territory.
But the real issue, Dave, and I talked about this, I mentioned it briefly yesterday. Jamie Dimon came out and he says negative territory. We're negative interest rates. We're in territory we've never been there before. What's life after you hit negative rates? What is life after that? What happens next? It ain't good.
Well, it just seems, doesn't it, that amongst all of this volatility and uncertainty, that you'd think the last thing we want to do is go down another path of heightened uncertainty with negative rates. It's bizarre.
And they're going to do it because they would rather do that than allow some pain, financial pain, because this whole, it's just all a charade. It's all an illusion. It's all because there's no strong fundamentals under anything except gold and silver. They have ruined, they might have manipulated the prices of gold and silver. They might have said the things to keep the price of gold and silver down. But every other market out there has been manipulated far greater than the gold and silver. Gold and silver is the only market that I see that has some true fundamentals underneath it.
Oh, Melody, you must think, when will we ever learn?
It's different day and it's the same issues, but negative interest rates, yeah. What's life after that? I can't imagine. We were talking about Zuckerberg, and I just wanted to say I mentioned that Bitcoin plummeted. I just want to touch on this briefly before we move on, that Bitcoin was how high just 2 months ago? 10,000?
Yeah.
And now we're, mid sevens. And we had a plunge in it come today. What was that, Dave?
Well, it was at least 9%, down to 7,400 some.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the lowest since June.
And didn't Zuckerberg, he was... he appeared before the House Financial Service Committee, and he wanted to talk about his little new cryptocurrency, the Libra.
Oh, well, that's true. And this nosedive came as members of that committee, both sides of the aisle, talked down, highlighted the downsides of cryptocurrency in general. They generally blasted Facebook's plans, its project, and warned the potential for Bitcoin and other cryptos to be used for money laundering and terrorism. Now, Jeff Dorman, who's chief investment officer at a company called Arca, said that today's sell-off of Bitcoin is a continuation of the themes that have been plaguing crypto for the past few months, i.e., increased regulatory scrutiny. And rightly so, I think.
Absolutely. And so I think that was, interesting. But, old Zuckerberg stays in there like he really knows.
I know.
He just irritates me.
This BS about, Libra will extend America's financial leadership and, as well as our democratic values around the world.
Oh, boy.
Give me a break. How self-serving can you get?
I know. It's but he's, you know, what's interesting though, he committed to that $1 billion to California for housing, and then he's on the Hill testifying like, you know,
no good deed goes unpunished.
I wonder how much other funds have funneled into other pockets and so forth, but you know, and it's just so obvious anymore, Dave. It's like it just doesn't matter, and that's what gets me. That's what gets me more. It just doesn't seem to matter until it's going to be.
Until we undo Citizens United and have true campaign finance reform. Where virtually every member of Congress, not every, but you know, virtually every member is beholden to somebody, some special interest. And until there are other reforms, you know, regardless of what political party you are, if you're affiliated with a political party, you know, gerrymandering reform, that redistricting, as it's known as, term limits, things are just going to continue the way they are. Because, you know, as it stands, most members of Congress can't look, I mean, some would say they can't look beyond their nose, which I'd agree with in many instances. But more importantly, they don't look past the next election, because they can't. They're beholden to the money, the power. And, you know, until we the people somehow, I don't know how this happens anymore, we've gotten so big, it's going to be more of the same, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid too. We won't be right back. We're at the end of the program. That went by quick. Oh my gosh. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And we will be returning tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye bye. If I got me a wealthy man.